This is Nina Lockwood, and welcome to the Inspired Life Formula Module 4, Access Inner Freedom. In this module, we're going to be covering the principles and the practices that will enable you to live your life based on the freedom that comes from choice. The choice you make about how you see the world, about which of your feelings that you encourage, and which thoughts you choose to live your life by. We're also going to examine what keeps you from making those choices. And the goal is for you to be able to choose the story that supports the life you want to live, to have inner peace, to be happy, and to let those qualities spread out into the world around you. So if you have a sense that your life could improve dramatically, if you just weren't being triggered emotionally or hung up by thoughts of what shouldn't be or can't be, then the best place to begin making changes is by taking a look at how you interpret the things that happen in your life. Now, we all know that humans are storytellers. It's part of who we are as a species. Stories give us endless ways of looking at life. Stories connect us, give us meaning and context, and enable us to chart our own personal course in the world. At the same time, it's important to understand that these stories or interpretations are just that. They are stories. They are not facts. They are one way out of many ways that we make sense of the world. And the more we understand that interpretations and beliefs are stories and are not necessarily the truth, we get a little more objective and a little less attached to what we believe and how it makes us feel. Especially when those stories cause us to feel that we are anything less than a joyful expression of the whole of life. So the stories that we live by shape our beliefs about the way life is or the way life should be. And those stories give us a framework on which our emotions are played out. So if we believe a thing to be true or false, right or wrong, good or bad, our emotions will reflect those beliefs. In earlier modules, we talked about the fact that our beliefs are often largely based on what others have told us is true. And that includes what we've been told, what we've read or heard or seen in the media, and even the effects of the mental and emotional patterns that may be passed down to us genetically from our ancestors. In our everyday life, some of our beliefs are conscious and intentional, but many of them, especially the ones that affect our self-worth or our sense of possibility, are often hidden in the depths of our psyche. But we also develop our beliefs as a result of our physiological and emotional reactions to people and situations around us, whether there's danger or safety, for example. And in those situations, we initially experience purely physical sensations to which we then assign explanations with names and causes. And those names and causes are going to color what we believe and how we react emotionally. If you think about it, as infants and then toddlers and then young children, the sensations that we experience are labeled for us by our parents. But for us, they're just sensations, and they pass as easily as they appear. And in this case, too, it's important to be able to identify what we're feeling. But the downside is that once we name it, we give it a reality, a solidity that becomes embedded in our idea of who we are, and then it takes on a life of its own. So all of those feelings are reinforced by what we subsequently tell ourselves we should be feeling and why we can't live without those feelings. We end up justifying their existence, believing that those feelings are really an accurate and honest response to what's happening in our lives. And that, in turn, justifies the necessity of having them and expressing them rather than letting them come and go without having to believe in them. There's a fine line between reacting with unexamined feelings because, quote, feelings never lie, which is another story, and being able to discern what your inner wisdom shows you is true. So however our beliefs come to be, the fact is that we or someone else interprets what's going on around us as well as inside us. And that interpretation affects our future, how we experience our future. Those beliefs also color our past and our present by setting up requirements for things we either want or don't want to have happen. So coming or going, we are trained to see reality and experience it within very narrow parameters, which means that we often resist what's happening in life because we don't think it should be happening. Now, we absolutely do need to have a way of interpreting what's happening to us. And the variety and the adventure in the stories that we tell ourselves about who we are and where we're going, all of that gives us a way to appreciate the vastness of life. So then the real question becomes not whether we should interpret what we experience, but whether those interpretations really do enable us to feel happier, more fulfilled, and more connected. Or do those stories make us feel isolated and unhappy and frustrated? We spend endless amounts of time and energy telling ourselves why things happen and what they mean, mostly because we feel better when we can make sense of what's going on. We're taught that having a way to interpret life will make it easier. And sometimes that's true, but it can equally not be true because we can get in our own way and complicate our lives by trying to fit it into an interpretation that seems true. That being said, it's really important to realize that in and of themselves, events are neither good nor bad. Even Shakespeare said this in his play Hamlet. There is nothing either good or bad, but thinking makes it so. And no doubt you've heard some variation of this statement, and most people see the truth of it, but we rarely understand the implications. I'm sure there are many situations that you can remember that may have initially appeared bad for you and good for someone else, or that appeared to be bad in the moment, but later turned out to be a blessing. So if nothing is good or bad in and of itself, and let's call that its worth or its goodness or its value, and then the consequences of each thing or event are also neither good nor bad, that means that nothing has any meaning other than what we give it. Now, at first that might seem like we're going to end up floating down the proverbial river of life without a paddle, but seen from another angle, this lack of or fluidity in meaning is actually incredibly powerful when we understand how it can change our lives. For one thing, it means that you get to choose the meaning of the events that happen to you. And if you get to choose the meaning, then you get to choose how you want to react and what you want to do next. For example, let's say you've written a book, and when you take it to the publisher, they reject it. Now, you could react by feeling deflated and depressed because your old interpretation labels this as rejection or failure. Or you could realize the meaning that you used to have for this kind of event is not true. And you could choose a different interpretation and a new meaning and see this event as an opportunity rather than an obstacle. You could choose to be open to whatever else wants to unfold rather than simply giving up and burying yourself in a hole. You don't have to be a victim to events. This is the point. You can give those events a new meaning, a new spin, so that you can create or allow something better to occur and not get stopped in your tracks. And it's important to remember here that although you may not be in control of what events occur or how they unfold, you can learn to be in control of how you interpret and respond to them. Byron Katie, the spiritual teacher and creator of the work that you'll learn a little bit more about later in this module, has said this: life happens for you, not to you. This is a really powerful turnaround of perspective that we can use so that we become open to the possibility that life is actually gifting us with circumstances, not trying to thwart us by them. Does this seem like a perspective that you might start to begin to see the value of? And so let's look at the idea of choice from another angle. Did you ever wonder about the lyrics in the children's song, Row, Row, Row Your Boat? I'm specifically referring to this one. Merrily, 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 life is but a dream. What does that mean, actually? Is life a dream? Do we really live in a world of illusion? Interestingly, this idea has been passed down through religions, through literature, through great works of art, and more recently, through the study of quantum physics. Each of us has a completely unique way of perceiving the world. Our senses, our nervous system, our memories are completely different from everyone else's on the planet. And while we may agree that things exist, and we may generally agree on the reason why or what we should do about it, our experience of out there is totally unique to us. And it's merely a way of speaking to say that we share the same reality, because we don't. Let's say you're locked into a story that tells you that what you're experiencing is true. It's ultimate. For example, you've been fired from your job and you feel like a failure. If you're attached to this event as a reflection of truth, you're going to feel powerless to change the effect that it has on you, the way that it will limit or restrict you in what you choose to do next and how you see yourself. But when you realize that what appears is not real or permanent in any ultimate sense, it won't have the same effect on you. And why? When something is relatively true, it's transient, it's impermanent, like a shadow on a screen. So that the something else, the new opportunity, for example, is just beyond it. And this is what many of our fairy tales are about. So once you see through the appearance and that you realize that nothing is as it appears to be, you can stop being a slave to what does appear to be and to that belief that it's the only reality there is. And that means that you're free to choose to react to that event in a different way, to choose a different response, to know that's only one perspective, one view that you're seeing, so that you can have a choice for something better or for a different interpretation. And you can wake up to realizing the truth behind the illusion and become a master at choosing a greater or more accurate expression of what you'd like to have, be, or do. Here's an example of how Neil Donald Walsh, another spiritual teacher, interprets what we often consider a setback or an obstacle, and how that stops us in our tracks. He believes that in the process of personal creation, it's highly probable that the opposite of what we intend will appear. Not to stop us, but to create a context in which our opportunity or our next creation can manifest. So what appears to be a failure is simply the setting or the context for a new choice. And he believes that oftentimes we need to have the opposite come up so that we can see the contrast of what formerly did not exist and seemed impossible now is a springboard to what it is that we want to create. Are you getting the meaning here? What he's saying is that if we didn't have an obstacle, if we didn't have a context or a contrast from which we could see what it is we want to create, we wouldn't know that we could do it. Now, here's another perspective from Hale Dwoskin of the Sedona Method, which is another technique that you'll learn about later in this module. And he has said that when you're setting a goal, what's going to automatically happen is that your internal resistance to this goal, all the reasons it can't be done, are automatically going to come up because that's what's in your way. So it's the perfect opportunity to let it go so that you can accomplish your goal. In either case, can you see how the only thing that's stopping you is your interpretation? And how you interpret what happens to you controls how you feel about it. Make a shift in one, and the other will follow. Most of us believe that we're definitely limited by what happens to us. And we don't think much about how we are limited by how we think about what happens. This is another one of those default mechanisms that's very old and it's very entrenched. When humans were still evolving and were living from their fight or flight reptilian brains, this was a very practical way of surviving. We really were victims of our circumstances back then, until we learned how to adapt to them. So today, most of us have gone beyond the survival mentality and we're looking for a way to thrive. And thriving requires us to pay attention to where we might be getting in our own way, so then we can make the necessary adjustments. And those adjustments are going to provide us with an inner freedom to really be able to enjoy life and help others do the same. And where we almost always get in our own way is when we're in highly charged emotional situations where we're reminded, either consciously or unconsciously, of unresolved events from our past. And if we're confused about what's going on, or if we're feeling threatened emotionally, We forget that we have a choice both in how we think and how we express ourselves. We prevent our compassion and our reason and our natural ability to discern what's needed from guiding our actions. And we also prevent ourselves from consciously selecting the outcome we want. When you learn to get out of your own way, you can start asking yourself, what kind of experience do I want to have in life, rather than how can I prevent or avoid the things I don't want? And I'm sure you can see how this is a proactive rather than reactive approach. And that in itself is going to give you more choices. You can begin asking what you want in the moment rather than getting caught up in defensive reactions as you're being swept away by those habitual thoughts and feelings. Despite what you may have learned through your socialization or your therapy or any of the many theories that you've probably been introduced to, it's not a done deal that you're locked into your beliefs. You can choose different beliefs if the ones that you have are not bringing you closer to happiness and fulfillment. You can choose to let go of feelings that have been making you miserable for as long as you can remember. And it's easier than you might think to change your story or even give it up altogether so that those natural feelings that are part of who you really are, peace and generosity of spirit and compassion and love, those can be your default. And once you start choosing how you want to feel instead of defaulting to unexamined feelings from your past, you discover that nothing is really opposing you and that everything is here to assist you. And that might sound like a stretch, but the more you try it, the more you'll see how it's true. And to this end, I'd like to share with you two different but complementary methods of getting rid of emotional and mental suffering so that you can become happier and more in harmony in yourself and in the world. Both of these methods have the capacity to evoke deep self-awareness in you. The first method is called the work, and it was created by Byron Katie. This is a simple process of self-inquiry that enables you to question your stressful thoughts, and it allows you to discover what's really going on. Questioning your stressful thoughts reduces their power to cause you pain, and it also reveals the truth that lies beyond those thoughts. And the second method is called the Sedona method. It was originally created by Lester Levinson and further developed by Hale Dwoskin. This too is a very simple form of self-inquiry where you give yourself permission to let go of those troubling thoughts and painful emotions so that you can live a more authentic and genuine life. So in the exercises that follow, I will explain each of these techniques in more detail, and I'll guide you through some sample exercises that you can then adapt for your own circumstances. Both of these methods can be used in the heat of the moment, so to speak, as well as before or even after an event that's likely to trigger difficult feelings. Both of these methods are simple, but they're powerful, and they don't require you to relive painful memories or analyze the origins of your thoughts and feelings. They do, though, point you to the simple truth of who you are, and the joy to be found in living. As with all of the modules, I highly encourage you to do your best to record your observations and your experiences in your journal, as well as on the feedback form that's provided for this module. I know you're going to have some amazing experiences working with these methods, so I'm already looking forward to hearing those stories. Thanks so much.